Hi everyone, and welcome back to Queer Mountaineers. I'm your host, Kayla Gagnon, and this week I sat down with Julie Ray Powers, a photographer based out of Brooklyn, New York, who's been living in a bunch of different places in Appalachia. We had a great chat about LGBTQ+ representation in the media, particularly Appalachian representation, as well as her upbringing in Appalachia and her current photography work. We'll hear more from Julie Ray after this ad. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Queer Mountaineers. I'm your host, Kayla Gagnon, and I'm here today with Julie Ray Powers, who's a photographer and all-around awesome person. Well, hello, Julie Ray. How are you doing?
Hi, Kayla. I'm pretty good. It's Friday, so I have no complaints.
Yes, of course, since episode will be released on Friday, so happy Friday to all the listeners.
Oh, yeah, happy Friday, everyone.
Yeah. So before we get started, well, my pronouns are she, her. Is it okay if I ask you for your pronouns?
Yeah, my pronouns are she, her, or they, them.
Awesome. Thank you for that. And where are you calling in from today?
I am presently in Brooklyn, New York.
Awesome. And you are originally from Appalachia, right?
Yes, I am. I was born in Mingo County, West Virginia, and lived there for a bit and then moved around to various other parts of Appalachia throughout my life. And then I most recently moved to Brooklyn from Columbus, Ohio, which is where I did grad school and, you know, grew up into my queer person self.
Where else in Appalachia did you kind of bop around to for a few years?
I did a semester at WVU in Morgantown, like 2007. And depending on which sort of Appalachian map you subscribe to, there's a lot of them, a lot of different definitions of Appalachia, but I did community college in Roanoke, my home county in Virginia, where I did like most of my growing up, is kind of Appalachian. It feels weird to say that because the ARC doesn't define it that way. And then my dad lives in Jackson County, West Virginia. And so I spent a couple of months living with him in 2017. Oh, and I also lived in Schuylkill County, Pennsylvania in 2017. They had an e-commerce photo studio out there for Saks Fifth Avenue. So that was like my first solo adventure living in Appalachia, or in a Appalachian area that I wasn't super familiar with.
That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. Well, I mean, one of the things this podcast tends to talk about and, you know, dissect is how Appalachia is viewed to the rest of the country and the world through media. Well, you are a photographer and you capture a bunch of different stories. Out of curiosity, what are some of the ways that your work kind of reflects your experience in living in Appalachia for a good part of your life?
That's a good question. I think it doesn't necessarily like reflect my life in Appalachia necessarily, but it's more of it's process oriented. It's, I'm trying to see how I fit into Appalachian and into my family dynamics and this long history that we have in coal mining and labor and all these very masculine things. And so in my work, I'm very much trying to like, where do I fit into that? Because I am a butch presenting person and the gender lines growing up were actually a lot more fluid than people give Appalachia credit for. But you know, like I am an artist, I am queer. And national media says, oh, those things don't exist in Appalachia. And so I spent so long trying to see myself. And then when I came out, I was like, how do I even see myself in my own family? So I think that's kind of what is happening in my work and sort of like a broad scope of things.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you mentioned that, you know, there was like kind of more blurring with gender lines in Appalachia. Now, I'm not originally from Appalachia, but do you mind elaborating a little bit about that with, you know, the gender lines that you described earlier?
Yeah, I just like a good example is the masculinity in my family, like it is very masculine. It does take up a lot of space, but there's a tenderness with the men in my family. Like my dad loves romance novels and he's not afraid to tell people about it, which most people wouldn't necessarily guess. And then sort of as a child, I loved boy clothes. I was always wearing my cousin's hand-me-downs. I mean, I guess that was probably part pragmatic, but I think there's also a gender component to that. Short haircuts. I was riding motorcycles and four-wheelers and, you know, playing sports and all these things. And they would buy me Hot Wheels cars and Barbies. And I got to do almost everything that the boys got to do, which I feel like a lot of people assume that the gender roles in Appalachia or West Virginia are more strict than that. And then when I think about the women in my family, like they're not the most like traditional like visualization of womanhood, right? Like my mom thinks makeup is a scam. You know, she, a lot of clothes she wears were my dad's clothes and so on and so forth. So it's just, at least in my experience, it was a lot more fluid than I think a lot of people realize.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Thanks for sharing that. Well, I mean, you mentioned that a lot of people don't think, or at least according to, you know, national depictions of Appalachia, that queerness is something that can't, you know, queerness and being Appalachian just can't exist in the same region. What are some of the ways that you've seen, you know, queer Appalachians or, you know, those who grew up Appalachian or queer and maybe live somewhere else? You know, what are some of the ways that you've seen kind of people use that and try to tell their own stories?
I think I'm just seeing people get louder about it. I feel like for such a long time, I kind of lived in this silo of myself when it comes to like queer Appalachianness. And now that I'm older and wiser, I'm like kind of starting to seek out the spaces where I can connect more. But I think the national media really calling everything Trump country and reducing the already very narrow idea of Appalachianness to something even smaller. I think there started to be this bubbling up, right, of like all of us individually who had been saying things maybe just in our own peer groups or individually on Twitter started to rise to the top a bit more and find a presence that way. So that's kind of how I've seen it. I don't necessarily think I've seen a ton of like photographic visual representations of queerness in Appalachia that I can think of, but there is a lot more work about rural queerness coming out, which is amazing. There's this trans photographer named Nadia Stegman out in like the cornfields of Illinois who makes the most amazing work about being trans and, you know, living in rural Illinois. And it's like, yeah, we exist and we don't have to be urbanites if we don't want to.
Yeah, I mean, there's other like a, you know, example, there's Country Queers podcast. That's another one that's kind of, you know, similar. I'm trying to think. I mean, Wussy Mag based out of Atlanta is doing, you know, similar work with, you know, sharing particularly the Southern queer experience.
Yeah, I love Wussy Mag. It's so good. They're so cool.
Absolutely. They have such cool content, and their Instagram alone is just phenomenal, like all the stuff that they share. Shout out to Wussy Mag. Yeah, I mean, also I remember especially with trying to talk about, you know, rural queers and things like that, particular discussion that came up on Twitter, which was a few years ago now, but still kind of pretty relevant, is when Taylor Swift's music video for You Need to Calm Down came out. Yep, then take a breath, you remember? just that whole music video of just seeing like people being like, this might not be as progressive as you think, guys. Like, Oh man, that was one prevalent example I could think of that kind of discourse happening online, at least.
Yeah, I remember when that happened. I was very disappointed because I am a Taylor Swift fan. I'm coming out as a Taylor Swift fan. And just to kind of see someone who is supposed to be, I guess we can call Taylor a gay icon, right? And she grew up in like suburban Pennsylvania.
Yeah, she grew up on a, I know she grew up on a Christmas tree farm because she has a
Okay.
song about
Yeah. So, you
it.
know, like, but she really bought into that way of representing people, and I just don't think making fun of people who are impoverished is like, it's not interesting, it's not woke, it's punching down. And I think again it really reduces those areas to singular experiences, whereas they're not singular experiences. They Everyone has a different life there. People have rich lives, and a lot of those people suffer from a lot of systemic issues that keep them in that particular place. So it was very, it was disappointing for sure. And then to have like all those other queer icons in that video, kind of like on the bandwagon, if you will, I was like, damn, y'all, like, really?
Yeah.
Okay, right. Like the, what am I trying to say? Like this metro oriented queerness is like the only right way to be queer, or like, you know, is in opposition to ruralness or small towns. And I was like, right, like this narrative persists. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. But, thankfully there's some, at least I'm seeing from smaller, zines and podcasts and things like that that are probably doing some better work than some national outlets in actually being on the ground and not parachute journalism. For those of you who don't know what that is, it's pretty exactly what it sounds like. People just drop in to tell a story, even though they haven't really met these people, haven't seen exactly what their lives are like, just being like, oh my God, it's horrible. Oh my God, these poor people, backwards, all that stuff. That's the bare essentials, version of parachute journalism right there. So yeah, go ahead. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Yeah, oh no, I was gonna say that I feel like that happens all the time still today. And it's like there are people who live in those areas that you could hire to write about it or photograph it or any number of things. But
Well,
you know.
if you need a shout out for another organization that does that work, is 100 Days in Appalachia. They actually do. They actually it's based in it's based out of like the most of the people who are like who work there are based in Morgantown. I did used to work for them, and I can say personally that they are a lovely bunch of people, and they are hiring people from all over Appalachia to write stories, share photographs, all that stuff. So 100 Days in Appalachia is also a great resource if you want to get some non-parachute authentic Appalachian journalism. So
Yeah, absolutely. I also love just was it West Virginia Public Radio?
yes,
Yeah.
absolutely. Yeah,
I haven't listened to it in a while, but I used to really enjoy
they
that.
have, I believe one of their podcasts is Inside Appalachia is one of them they do. So go check that out if you're itching for some good storytelling in Appalachia. But let's pivot over back to you and your work. You're a photographer. So how did you get into that art form slash medium?
I always took art classes at, you know, in middle school and high school, and I really enjoyed it. I really loved it. But the thing was, is that I was bad at it. I was a bad artist. Like I couldn't draw well. You know, shading, tone, paint, painting was terrible. You know, there was just nothing I was picking up on in what one would call like a positive, effective way. But I just kept doing it anyway. So I was like, I really enjoy this. And then I was like freshman in high school, and I was dating this guy, and I became best friends with his sister, and then I dumped him. And anyways, the sister and I became incredibly great friends. We're still friends to this day. Her name is Mallory. She had a camera, and she was like, I got this camera. I like taking pictures. I need like a air quote model. Will you come with me? And so I was her little subject, and she showed me the images and they were beautiful. She's very talented. And I was like, oh, I love this. I want to try this. And so I like got my dad's tiny little Kodak point and shoot. It's like one of those you sit on a dock and it will like print out things. I started taking pictures and I printed out like a handful, like five. And I took them to my high school art teacher, who had pretty much been fairly blunt with me. She's like, you're not good at art. You're not good at this. Like, yeah. And I handed them to her and she looks at them. She's silent for like a minute or two. And she goes, my God, you found it. There it is. She's like, these are great. And so that was enough for me to like plow forward. And yeah, I eventually went to school for it and haven't really put it down since.
That's awesome. I think that is an interesting story. It's definitely interesting. Yeah. I mean, for me, when it comes to photography, I just did, I took two photojournalism classes in college, and it definitely makes you kind of look at things differently, for sure. I mostly primarily do video when I'm not doing podcasting, of course. But you know, it really does impact how you like look at the world, even though I only did it regularly for like a year. So
like, yeah, photography is amazing. And I never took a photojournalism class. Like most of my classes were fine art, I guess, but yeah, photography is a very special medium, I think.
Yeah, and well, I've seen some of your work on your website, and I'll make sure to link your website in the description for the episode so everyone who's listening right now can check that out. Can you tell, for people who haven't heard of your work or haven't seen your work, do you want to talk a little bit about some of the things that you focus on when you're doing your images, making your images happen?
Yeah, I think the biggest through line in all of my work, you know, no matter what the actual body of work is that it all kind of derives from my own personal experience or identity or something I'm interested in. So on my website, the body of work Salt is about sort of like women loving women, desire, and their Polaroids of a nude figure who was my partner at the time. Out of Hiding is about queer chosen families. And while it's not like self-portraiture or about my life, you know, that project derived from sort of my chosen family saving my life. And I was like, I'm not the only one with a chosen family. I see them all the time. So I documented people's chosen families in Columbus, Ohio. So I think overall, there's some sort of like derivative of the self that manifests these projects.
Yeah, absolutely. And chosen family is like, I think it's actually starting to become more of a common word these days. It's definitely like, especially through representation of queer folks, and even through like, for example, like the shows that have become popular, like Pose, for instance, with the introduction of these chosen families, mm-hmm. you know, through the ballroom scene shown on TV. And also, actually, I think Elton John actually like released a song with, I can't remember the other artist's name, The Life of Me, but Chosen Family is also a song that like he had the key. I know we definitely duetted it, but it's just probably a more common term for sure.
Yeah, I feel like it started to become popular around the time I was making that work, or like maybe just before, I don't know. But I think it sustained itself long enough to where it's even leaking into like straight culture. I think I, you know, saw someone in their like gratitude speech for some award thanking both their biological family and their chosen family, and I was like, huh, that's new, cool.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, well, another thing that's kind of being shown with chosen families is like doing things like Friendsgiving, you know, where like friends celebrate Thanksgiving together. And yeah, I'm actually looking at them. I've just pulled up here the Chosen Family, the Out of Hiding project. And these really are some beautiful images. And go check out their website. You know, Julie Ray has some awesome images there.
Just thank you.
I'm gonna gush a little bit real quick. Yeah, in addition to your personal work that you have, you also, I believe, did you create it? Do you start it with Soft Lightning Studio? Let's just say Soft Lightning Studio, you're involved with that. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Or rather, could you tell people who don't know about Soft Lightning?
Yeah, absolutely. So Soft Lightning Studio is a side project of mine for photographic publishing. Essentially, we make photo books and small zines and occasionally have an Instagram presence. It's not really something I've been very good at keeping up with. But Soft Lightning Studio, the entire point of it is to support photographic work by people who are generally oppressed or ignored by the photographic community. So Black, Indigenous, queer, people of color, trans photographers, you name it. Like, there's a lot of work out there that goes unseen and unacknowledged because the photography industry, whether it's commercial, fine art, like techie guys, whatever, it's very white, cishet, white male, and the gatekeeping is strong. And so 2 years ago, I was unemployed. I had like kind of lost the contract for my job, and there was a lot of, right, the discourse is like, yeah, fuck these white dudes. And I was like, yeah, fuck these white dudes. When is someone gonna do something about it? And I was like, well, it's not like I don't have the time to do something about it. Let's do something about it. Like, I've got the power to do that. So I'm just going to start it. And all it really is a website and an Instagram. But, you know, I was like, someone has to do the work. I'm going to do the work. Right. So anyways, that's Soft Lightning Studio. And I'll just like digress a little bit in that. So far we have published three zines. One is a pride zine that celebrated the 50 years since Stonewall, since the Stonewall riots. And that came out that summer that I was unemployed. So like 2 years ago. And then Soft Lightning volume 1 and 2. But the big news is that this summer we're releasing our first monograph of work. And the book is called The Home We Know by a photographer named Ben Willis out of Columbus, Ohio. And it's a love letter to his community. So that's something I'm really looking forward to and we're working on right now.
That's awesome. Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to see how that turns out. That's so cool. And also you mentioned like zines and things like that. And do you mind elaborating a little bit on what a zine is? 'Cause that's kind of important staple of queer culture, especially particularly in rural areas.
Yeah, so I get a zine is just sort of like a independent publication, and typically it's a little more on the homemade side, I guess, like, you know, Xerox and stapled together. I happen to get mine from like a publishing on demand company. It's not like the most elegant thing, but yeah, kind of.
I don't think it's supposed to be the most elegant thing.
No, it's not. And I would say one of the important aspects of zine culture is that it's supposed to be like accessible, right? Like monetarily, it's not this super expensive thing. And generally the history of it is that it's like more left-leaning or like radical culture. Is that right?
I think that sounds about right.
Or like non-mainstream. How about that? Non-mainstream.
Yeah, because there's a couple of zines out there. Wussy Mag, some could qualify that as certainly a zine, like that we just talked about earlier. Yeah. Zine obviously is short for magazine, but I think simply defined, like queer, especially queer zines, just, you know, ways for the queer community to tell their own story without, you know, like it's an accessible way, I should say, that queer people have been able to tell their stories, you know, over the years.
Yeah. And then some people, for the life of me, I cannot remember this person's name. I think their Instagram handle is Xena Warrior Princess.
I love that.
I don't know this person's pronouns, so I'll just use it. So they started this zine called the girlfriend of my ex-girlfriend is my ex-girlfriend. Right, like very like queer, incestuous. So this was a zine, and it has now been picked up by like a pretty solid publisher, and it's a book, which I think is really cool. So check out that title if you're interested.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for telling me about that. I'm always looking for queer literature in any form that I can get it, you know? That's so cool. Well, one of the things, another awesome project that you're working on is this upcoming photography book with the University of Kentucky Press. Do you want to share a little bit about that project?
Yeah, I do. It's going to be a big thing, I think, a big undertaking, but I recently signed a contract with the University of Kentucky Press to publish a book tentatively titled Queering Appalachia's Visual History, a collection of queer Appalachian photographers. And my goal is to get some writing and some images and just kind of an anthology of contemporary queer Appalachian photographers, you know, telling their own story in their own ways. And the work doesn't necessarily have to be Appalachian or queer, but just to say like, yeah, these are people who exist and have rich experiences. And so that's kind of the gist of the beginning of it. And I'm hoping it will evolve as I start collecting people for the anthology. But as far as I know, there's no other photo book like it on the market right now. And so I'm excited to do that. And it's really weird to like fill the gap that I was looking at in grad school. I was like looking for other queer Appalachian photographers and stuff to reference for my thesis, and I had a hard time finding it. And so now I'm like, wow, I'm helping usher that work into the world. How yes. Amazing.
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, if you like kind of making the things that you want to see.
Yeah, you know? For sure.
If there are any queer Appalachian photographers who might be listening to the podcast, if they're interested in submitting for this, would they get in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to put out the official call on my Instagram, hopefully in the next week or two, if not the next month. So my Instagram handle is at Julie Ray Powers, JULIERAE Powers. And then it will also exist on my website, julieraypowers.com. And if you have questions about the call, I made an email specifically for this project. It's queerappalachiaphoto@gmail.com.
Yeah, thank you for that. And I'll make sure to put that in the description as well. So in case any queer Appalachian photographers happen to stumble upon this podcast and are listening to this, yeah, it's a cool project to get a part of.
Send me your work. Send me if you have essays or papers that you've written that seem relevant to queer Appalachian photography, send those. Or if you have an idea for an essay or paper, you can pitch that to me as well. So don't be shy. Please send in your work.
Absolutely. Kind of like a last like big interview question. What do you hope to accomplish with your work, with your art and all of that good stuff?
That is such a huge question.
Yeah, that's why I say it from the end.
I think my main goal for everything that I do is to kind of facilitate things into the world. I see Soft Lightning as facilitation. Some people have called me a curator, which I get nervous about that word. It feels a little elitist to me. And there's nothing wrong if you are a curator. That's not a judgment on anyone. But I try to like facilitate connections between people, connections to work, you know, like, oh, so-and-so, do you know so-and-so? And, you know, facilitating this queer Appalachian work into the world. I guess that's just, I hope I can keep building bridges with people, and doing the good work, you know, that's the lofty goal, in my purpose for doing what I do.
There you go. That's a good way. That's perfect. It's sum that up? Sorry, I know it's often an odd, difficult question to ask. So I usually save these kind of questions for the end anyway. But thank you for sharing that. I know we've shouted out a lot of different, queer Appalachian content creators, zines, all of that stuff. Are there any that we missed that you'd like to shout out before we sign off today?
There's just a few off the top of my head that they may not live in Appalachia, or maybe they do, but they have connections to. So Aunt M. Lobo, they do some amazing work. Shauna Caldwell, Lydia C., Megan King. The list could go on and on, but those are just a few off the top of my head.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And I think that sums up everything. Well, thank you so much, Julie Ray, for being on the podcast today. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to chat with me.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much.
Thank you again to Julie Ray Powers for being on the show this week. Make sure you check out all of her work on their website and follow her on social media and support her work. All of those links are in the description for this episode. If you like what you're hearing, make sure to follow Queer Mountaineers on Instagram at Queer Mountaineers Podcast, Twitter at Queer Ears Pod, ears spelled with two E's, and like the Facebook page. Thank you all again for listening this week. Once again, I'm your host, Kayla Gagnon, and this has been Queer Mountaineers. I'll see you all next time.